Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Oh, it's a goal. Who got the assist? Who got the assist?
Hi, everyone. Blimey, what a week. Sometimes you just get those which are really flat, mean no one's happy, and basically feel like a total waste of everybody's time. But enough about my first week back at work after paternity leave. If anyone from my employer is listening, that was a joke. I, of course, love working for your company and I'm hugely engaged in my role. But talk about FPL and yeah, we're back to talk about it. And we're podding in full fat, high sugar, no additive mode today after a couple of weeks featuring me popping in for a short 20-minute ramble, mainly ruminating over my bad decision-making in FPL rows. This is what happens when you're not around, Lucy. You're all right.
I'm grateful to have avoided recording during a period of misery and red arrows for both of us, thanks to ghost injuries and sudden recoveries. But anyway, on that happy note, we are Who Got the Assist. You can find Tom on the main account at WGTA_FBL, and you can find me, Lucy, at Lucy Hynett with two T's. On the pod today, we'll be covering a few points on making transfers at this late stage in the season. In the light of Tom's ill-fated move for Big Game Kev, we'll discuss if we can make any informed decisions when we always have incomplete information. And then we'll consider if there's any scope for differentiation at this stage of the season, or if the time has passed for going rogue. For this, we'll look at the role of analytics and what this might have on our transfers and consequently on content creators and influencers. Do we dare go against this? Mini league tactics. If you're looking to consolidate or advance in your mini league, how does that influence your moves? We're recording on the evening of the 8th of May. All FPL relevant games have finished, and I'm going to avoid shouting at the television this evening as Southampton lose to Forest.
They have to score, though. So it's 2-1 now. Yeah. Alcaraz as well, who I saw, he didn't he also win a tennis tournament as so he's a multi-talented guy. Alcaraz.
Yeah, the up-and-coming guy in tennis and football.
Oh no, amazing. Right, I mean, first thing though, this week, again, I mean, we've spoken about this a fair bit before we get on to the game of reviews. Like, how flipping tedious was it to be sat there once again at 20 past one, just waiting for some twit to put on something really childish on, like, to give us some information. I mean, I just don't know about you, but I just hated being, like, enthralled to someone like that. I, you know, just hanging on, waiting for some numpty to talk, to filter the news through. And then we met with a video with sex noises on it. I mean, yeah, I'm aware some people might find that hilarious. And it is hilarious if you're kind of mentally a child. But, I mean, I just felt like a bit idiotic, I guess, and I'm hardly like the most pearl clutcher guy in the world, but it was a real sort of eye roll moment just remembering that that's the person that you're reliant on for news. And it just became an absolute farce. Like, people on the timeline were going, oh yeah, I've heard this, I've heard that, I've got this information. It just became such a farce. I just hate it. I really do. Move deadline 30 minutes before the first kickoff, or even at the first kickoff, so everyone's got all the information and we can get on with our lives. So what do you think? Was it the same for you?
Yeah, much the same. I think we have consequently completely proven that the move deadline from, you know, a couple of seasons ago has had absolutely no impact on this leaks thing. The leaks just become more and more chaotic and tentative. I am kind of pissed off that there's someone that just sits on information and instead of just giving the information, puts more pressure on servers that we know are really bad. Like, if it had come out that Haaland wasn't playing, and there was 10 minutes to go, we'd have had the breakage, wouldn't we?
Yeah, there'd have been no chance. I think I was watching James Planet FPL, and he said literally that, and with my daughter on my lap, and she kind of laughed at that, and I was like, oh, that's nice, because he literally said, you know, if it was Haaland who was out, then it would be game over. Like the stream would end, and I just have to get on my phone and do stuff. So it was a blessing almost that didn't happen, because I mean, I don't know about you, but I had Twitter on my phone, I was watching James on the TV, and I had like three tabs open with like one move that I could possibly do, another one where I'd benched Haaland and Captain Salah, another one where I'd done something else. And it was very kind of like, I don't, you just don't need that circus. It's just FPL. And
yeah, I was at my in-laws, so I didn't have my computer. So I was on my phone with the app open, because that seems like the most reliable way of making a transfer from your phone from previous server incidents.
Right.
So I just had the one move I'd make if... It seemed likely that Haaland was going to start by that point, because there had been a couple of other leaks that suggested he was playing. So I'd kind of concluded that he was playing, so I left that. So I just had one move on my phone, which was to basically bench Grealish, because he was the one that I wasn't sure about. So, and then it was just to press confirm if I got the news. So,
but yeah, okay.
I just hate how people lord it over you. Like, I know that it's great if you've got information and you are incredibly entitled to do whatever you want with that information, and if you want to build a massive social following through it, then absolutely do that. But so then basically spend more time creating a video just to kind of taunt people, it doesn't sit that well with me.
No, I just don't want to be beholden to these twits anymore. So I mean, do FPL adjust it? Well, it's at the time of the season where it's only the Anoraks playing anyway. So, I mean, are they really going to care? Because at the start of next season, they're going to boast about 10 million people are now playing FPL rather than the people who keep it going through the sort of hinterlands of the season.
Anyway. I think it's annoying, because I think we feel like the leaks are one of the few ways that you can kind of gain an edge against everyone else that's doing content creation, because you have to be around at that given time. But
yeah,
then you feel like you're being anchored to your phone or your computer or whatever. Like, I very rarely actually am around on a Saturday to be able to make these last-minute moves. It was just because it was coronation weekend and it was absolutely pissing it down outside that I was actually around to do it.
Yeah. I mean, it could have just been like, let's put some perspective. Like, my daughter had started crying, or you know, she needed a nappy change. I'd have gone and done that. Like, I'm not a crazy person, but at the same time, it does seem a bit, you know, I don't want that to be the focus of, you know, FPL should be like something that you play to relax, not have these sort of highly tense moments before the football has kicked off. Like, that's what annoyed me a little bit. Right, sorry, slight digression there. Let's move on to the game week reviews properly. So as you know, everything's just finished. Lucy, do you want to go first? How have the last kind of 3 weeks been since we spoke as well? And how did this week go?
They've been bad. I don't think there's any other positive spin I can put on it. They've been pretty bad. So I was one of those people that fell for the Bruno injury photos. And in hindsight, I probably should have waited for the press conference, but I didn't. And I sold Bruno ahead of him getting 19 points over 3 fixtures, including the double game week. And then that was bad. But that was made even worse by the fact that also involved moving out Kane, because I needed Salah. So that move couldn't have gone a lot worse. And then ahead of the double game week, it looked like Nathan Ake was injured and wouldn't be back for the first game.
Oh.
So I thought, what's the point in having an injured player? And I needed to buy Trent. So out went Ake, in came Trent, and Ake missed the first game week. The game of the week, and I thought, well, that's a good decision. No, it was a terrible decision, because he got a 15-pointer. So, over that period, I've tanked nearly 20,000 places, nearly doubled my rank, gone from 25k to 44k. And as I wrote up these notes earlier today, I wrote that with 3 Brighton and 3 Newcastle already in situ, I can start to repair some of the damage. But then March got injured and McAllister scored. So I've taken another red arrow this week, admittedly only from 43 to 44. And I'm not feeling that chipper as this ramble may suggest. But I got 36 points this week, much like everyone had a bit of Brighton, a bit of Newcastle and Trent at the back. Salah was the only one worth talking about. But Holmes' assist was a all that I had else. So yeah, not great, not feeling that good. And now I need to do user transfer on March. So
yeah.
I think that about summarizes it.
Yeah, it's a real spanner in the works, that one, isn't it, for so many people, because it was like, you know, the rest of your team set and you're messing around, we'll speak about it later, with, you know, one or two slots maximum. And now, you know, you've got another move to make, which means that you could, the opportunity cost of that could be, you know, your original plan, or you could have to take a hit now. And yeah, no, we'll definitely talk about that later. It sounds, I mean, it's happened to me this season. It's happened to everyone at some point throughout the season. Every season, but yeah, especially galling with so few moves left and so few game weeks left. How did I do? Well, when I originally wrote these notes again, I wrote that I was more incensed than a Buddhist templar at the KDB blank, just because, you know, he got three assists. He should have had three assists, and he ended up with 3 points. So one bonus showed how well he played in that game. And it's just that horrible feeling of the torture of watching a player just create so many great chances, especially that one for Haaland where he just nicks it down for him and Haaland somehow managed to smash it wide. Like, the points evaporating into thin air again and again and again. It was so frustrating because, like, obviously any points that he got for me would have been absolutely massive, for 6% or something like that. But that was my note before this evening, thinking, oh, aren't I unlucky? And then suddenly you had Mitoma tapping the ball across, and McAllister, who was prostrate on the floor, the ball went in off the back of his head, I think. So a comedic goal to the nth degree, which has netted me a healthy green out of nothing, really. So 44 points for me, a relatively large green arrow up from 17k to 13k, and stopped the rot. So that was, it would have been six red arrows in a row if March, I keep saying that, McAllister hadn't shown up today. Well, I don't know if he did show up really, but did what he did. I think he's also nabbed a bonus somehow as well. So that's incredibly fortunate. And I even managed to get a green arrow carrying a dunk minus one. So, hey, there we go. I mean, could have been a lot worse for both of us. To be honest, could have had Shah, Cher, and Mr. Steele, like a few people did. I saw, for example, Wes, Phil Heisenberg had both of them. Couldn't happen to a nicer guy. Ouch. Right. Yeah. Let's move on to the Min League update. So obviously low EO for a Saint, so I'm assuming this is pretty much it. In equal ninth, it is FPL Edison 31 and Sean Allen, the super dudes, both of them rise from 11th for FPL Edison, 21st for Sean, 43 and 51 this week. It's that sort of caliber week. Joint seventh, Peter Stead up from 10th to 7th, 41 points for him, and down from 6th to 7th, Jan for Conjure, 36 points for Jan this week. In sixth, up from ninth, is Zishan Bimani, 43 points for him. In fifth, down from fourth, Alex Terry, Sack of Potatoes, just 32. In fourth, up from fifth, Mikhail Nesvik, 37. In third, down from seventh, from second, Mark Bleakley. Oh dear, Mark was top for a long time. He's now given up his the second place, and he's just holding on to the podium, 9 points ahead of fourth. In second, up from third, is Josiah Veredasdian, 43 points to Josiah this week. And sticking in first is Balazs Pokozdy. Sorry again, I keep mangling your name. 47 points for Balazs this week, the Blazenberg. So yeah, very, very low scoring week, as seen by lack of mobility for most people in the Min League. And finally, the market forces to segue us into the main section about transfers. And it's, as you'd expect, really, Wilson, Isaac, both being brought in by FPL managers en masse, over 100,000 transfers in for Wilson. He was slightly lesser owned than Isaac. I think that he may well overtake him at the start of the next game week. One of those where Wilson has done more points recently than Isaac has, and that probably is where it goes. And plus, once people start going, all the lemmings start following. As a result, players like Watkins sold by 100,000 after a blank this week. Got a yellow card as well, I think. And Tony, 43,000 sales for him. In midfield, Odegaard's been brought in, done some points. Why not? A 49,000 transfer in for him. Estupiñán's been brought in by 38,000, and McAllister's been brought in by 32,000. This doesn't yet reflect that Solly March is going to be sold off in droves. Obviously, I suspect we'll probably see McAllister, people crabbing over due to the extra fixtures. I suspect his number's going to go up a lot. He may well end up being the most bought player in, to be honest. But elsewhere, Grealish has been sold. 53,000 managers have seen enough of Jack Grealish now, after he was shockingly rested, I should probably say. I was going to say dropped, but that's not true. And Saka and Andreas make up top five. So, yeah, most people just gearing up for the end game, really. And this is where we are. And this is what we've been talking about, transfers in the end game. So I think there's probably a few kind of strands to talk about here, as Lucy mentioned in the very beginning. It's kind of to start off, to think about transfers without kind of having that maximum information and what we need for a transfer to be legitimated, for us to be comfortable with making transfer. Then we'll kind of talk about analytics a tiny bit and the role of FPL review in making transfers, especially this season where it's become much more pronounced. And finally, transfer tactics in terms of mini leagues, now, before we hit on some questions. Transfers without maximum information. So if anyone did listen to my Tomalogue last week, it was me ruminating really over buying Kevin De Bruyne and not going for a more obvious option and feeling a bit discomforted, I suppose, that I hadn't done what had worked for me the whole season in terms of buying a safe pick like Bruno or something. I mean, you said at the time that, you know, you seem like you're hindsighting a little bit there, Tom. I mean, can you at least understand though why I was trying to differentiate there? Like,
I think you're being really harsh on yourself. I think given the information we had about Kev and the fixtures and how it was all kind of all lined up, I think a lot of people would have bought him, but the fact is the majority of us don't have the team value you have, or for that matter, the structure that allows it. So, you know, it's all very well saying, oh, you went for a differential pick that no one else went for. The reason no one else went for it is because, you know, we don't have the money. So I completely see why there was a big pull there. We were seeing evidence that Kev was doing his kind of end of season, big game style, you know, throwing in loads of points. And there was good reason to think that it would continue. Just happened to be that we didn't have all of the information.
Yeah, it's very frustrating, isn't it? It's just one of those where, I mean, you're right. It was me hindsighting. And I did acknowledge, of course, I was hindsighting because you've got all that sort of positive, the positive spin on it was that mixture of a need to kind of Hail Mary it a bit and flex that team value because I did have that sort of red arrow rot going on after five in a row. And there's also that kind of sense of railing against the formulaic nature of the end of the season. Because, as you say, if people could afford KDB over Grealish, they would have bought KDB over Grealish. So I could, therefore, I might as well differentiate. But I don't know, it's one of those where I'm still not sure I stand behind it completely. Like, maybe I should have just bought Bruno in, you know. But there's an element of I've made my bed and I'll lie on it now at the minute. Because I think I'll just keep him until maybe the final week of the season and just hopefully let variance work for me. I guess, you know, the wider question then about making transfers in an uncertain environment or when you don't have all the information. I mean, how do you approach that?
I mean, I think the problem is that press conferences are simultaneously not any use to anyone and also our best chance of getting good answers. So, you know, and that is especially true of Pep Guardiola conferences. For obvious reasons, managers aren't keen to reveal too much and there's no kind of written obligation or legal requirement that they give us concrete or accurate answers. But simultaneously, you know, the process of a manager talking through his team and talking through what they've done this week and how they're looking towards the next game is the best opportunity we get to have an understanding of where teams are and where players are and what fitness statuses are, etc. So we're always, to a certain extent, going to be slightly blind, and we are basically hoping that managers are honest and open about their players and their availability. And then, of course, there's also the added issue of the embargo. So I know that some stuff they can't write about or release information about until, is it 10:30 or 11?
Yeah, it's 10:30.
10:30. So that's another thing. Because I know, was it that transfer where you were like, I'm going to hold on until the embargo, and then you found it was the next day?
Yeah, it was. Yeah. So the embargo, I read an article by Jonathan Liu about this a while back, and the embargo is basically just a leftover relic from past times. And it's just basically the written press. So they've got some exclusive quotes, which are just for the written press alone. So they don't come out straight away on TV. Give a reason for people to buy newspapers, whatever that means. Well, newspapers, I've never heard of those. And the embargo comes out at 10:30 the night before the game of the team. So since we were playing on the Sunday, and I didn't realize that the embargo therefore wouldn't come out until the Saturday night rather than the Friday night. One of those sort of strange little wrinkles that I'm quite, you know, it takes up such a tiny part of my brain that I just completely forgot about it, basically. A few people have pointed that out to me, and yeah, well, fair play to them, to be honest.
Yeah, so that's another not ideal thing about the information we're given. You just have to get to a point, don't you, where you have a certain level of information and you just hope that that's everything. And I think you can't therefore beat yourself up when you aren't given that information or have no hint of that information. And I think that's very difficult to do on FPL, is be like, oh, why did I buy that player? You know, oh, he had a bit of a knock, or that he wasn't directly asked about that player. Like, why did I buy them? But the fact is that by the very nature of the game, we can't possibly know that all of the information. So we just have to make best guesses sometimes. And, you know, in certain cases, that means Lucy not looking at a photo on social media, and that means waiting for the press conference. But that's another issue.
For sure. I think just what you mentioned is that sort of weird duality about the press conference being great and also absolute tosh.
Yeah.
Like, just it just kicks sand into our collective decision-making faces, doesn't it, really? Especially the less trustworthy a manager. And plus, you also get stuff like if there's something kind of big affecting the team, like, you know, something's come out about the role of Abu Dhabi in something terrible, then that's going to be all the press conference is about. And you know, why don't you think of the FPL managers? It's unbelievable, isn't it?
That should be on a list of questions. All of the, you know, popular owned players, they should be asked directly about all of them. I can't believe that's not the case.
I know. It's absolute madness, isn't it? I mean, I guess it's a bit of a vexed question, and therefore, if we don't always have all the information, but if you had to kind of pick out some criteria that make you feel comfortable, secure about making a transfer, what sort of things would you say?
Well, I mean, ideally, I'd like, oh, yes, this player's trained very well and he will play 90 minutes this week. But I guess I'm probably not going to get that. So I guess the positive thing is that you want them to have been mentioned as fit, or you don't want them to have been mentioned in the list of injured players. Beyond that, that's about all you can get, really.
Yeah.
I mean, for Pep, I don't believe any of his, oh, he's playing so well, he's basically undroppable, because that doesn't mean anything, does it?
No, that tends to mean that player does get dropped the next game.
Yeah, yeah. So actually, comments on performance aren't that helpful. It's really, really more around fitness that I use it for. And that's shown it's not even very reliable then. So,
yeah, exactly. I think I've probably got a few things, and we've kind of touched them already. One, they completed the last game. That's kind of quite a good indicator.
Oh, okay, yeah, I guess so, yeah.
Yeah, and also look good. Like, ideally posting good numbers and looking dangerous without actually scoring yet. Like, it's always nice to get on before that wave crests, isn't it? And yes, I also had the manager doesn't mention him by fitness in press conference, or he does say he's fit. At least he says that he's not unfit. You know, the rest of the press conferences are absolute nonsense. So normally it's just kind of one or two snippets surrounding that is enough for me. And then, yeah, the embargoes, if you are really worried about it, just waiting for them. And, you know, to bring it back to the KDB example, there were all of these markers with that move, you know? Obviously, I couldn't get hold of the embargoes, but they're normally tosh anyway. There's never anything which is just like, oh, by the way, suckers, KDB's actually injured. I fooled you. It's mostly just kind of like, oh, guys, the guys are so amazing. Oh, you know, this team is incredible. The commitment is just great, guys. But that's literally mostly what they are.
Is that your Pep Guardiola impression?
It's loosely, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But I think Pep said something on the lines of, oh, you know, all of my team is fit except Ake. And it was just kind of like, oh, okay. Well, actually, that was a complete lie. And the same, we've seen it in the past, with like Eddie Howe, famously very loose with the truth in press conferences. There's always that sort of element of leap of faith, isn't there, with making a transfer around those press conferences. And I think especially as we reach towards the end of the season, that Man City double looming in 37, and you know, most people, I don't probably with Grealish and Haaland, and you know, maybe looking at another or whatever. I mean, to what extent are you going to take the leap of faith, or are you going to just kind of leave it, do you think, at this point, just for two City and hope for the best? Like that defense, for example, like even though everyone's saying, oh, Edison, yeah, I mean, Ortega played, it just doesn't feel like it's worth the risk of going any higher than two players, does it, for Man City, as stupid as that sounds?
I mean, I'm looking at it, and I might even lose Grealish because that might be my route to Bruno, back to Bruno. Yeah, I know, back to Bruno. But I don't hate Alvarez as a pick because his kind of risk factor is priced into him. So you just take on the chin that he's not going to play like anywhere near the full minutes, and you play him for that 1 week and you bench him for the rest of the weeks, maybe. But the majority of them I'm really struggling to sell myself on. And you can't take Pep Guardiola at any kind of face value. So it's very difficult to make a judgment. I think maybe Diaz could be interesting, but he's quite expensive. And I've got to a point where he's not really like a priority transfer.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm pretty cool on them in general. But I don't think it is just because of the, you know, Pep roulette factor.
Yeah.
I think any team would rotate at this stage. And
well, that's the problem, isn't it, as well? That's why the press conferences are simultaneous. As you said, absolutely useless and absolutely useful, because you do get an indication of what's going on with the player. But as you saw tonight with Solly March, like, there was nothing in the press conference about him potentially, you know, not being in his best moment, I think, is what De Zerbi has said. But that didn't come out in the press conference. And as I think that maybe that kind of ties in with what you said earlier about the managers not giving the opponents anything to kind of go on, or yeah, as much as possible. But no, it's just it gets worse and worse, I think, every season. Because at the end of the day, if the manager comes out and he's honest and says, this player is not fit, this player's not fit, like in the US, everything is kind of out on the table in terms of who's available and who isn't, then teams can, I guess, start to plan for what the plan B is probably going to be. Whereas if you don't get this, if they get all the information, then they're able to kind of spring a surprise on the other team. Although Everton didn't react too badly to March not being in tonight. So there you go.
Cool.
Right. Second part of this, and the analytics side of things. So I guess making transfers these days is such a structured process. Like back in the day, I think it was a lot more sort of instinct based. You look at a couple of tables on Fantasy Football Scouts, that's all there was at the time. They look at shots in the box or something, or pen box touches, as Nick always used to say. And they'd be like, oh, he's got five pen box touches in the last game. That's really good, that is. So then you'd be like, okay, well, I'm going to buy that. But then now we've got the advent of FPL review, other models are available. I mean, is it something, I know we both use it, how long have you been using it, I think, and has it changed your transfer process, do you think?
I think I've used it for 2 or 3 years, initially the free version, and now I pay for the full version. I think for me it's more of a reference point rather than a starting point. So I think a lot of people will start their plan based on what FPL review may be suggesting. I tend to look through a few possible avenues kind of independently, considering kind of weak points and priority transfers, and then I firstly use the review transfer suggester to see how I might best deal with those kind of individual issues and priorities, and see if I'm missing anything, like an angle to get to a player that I perhaps haven't considered. Tweaking the minutes as well. I think that's probably one of those areas where if you do use a model, then putting in your own minutes is probably a good idea. I think it's probably one of the few ways you can have a valuable input as an individual now. And then I kind of take it from there. So I don't always go for even an option that's on review. I don't always go for the kind of top suggestion in terms of maximum EV. It's just kind of it's like a reference point. So it's helpful and it informs my decision, but it's not what I hang my decision on, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think I'd be the same. It's like always a part of my decision making, but not the part. Right, like it's probably the best judge, I think, of what represents value. Like it's obviously the most objective thing we can probably take from one's looking at data alone, and that kind of assimilates that data and presents it in a way after crunching it, which is usable and digestible to the end user. But I don't totally, jobs to be done, delegate the whole decision to the model. It feels a bit reductive to say, but that's so unfun. Like there's no difference to me between doing that and copying content creators. Like it's just the same thing. Like and there's just no interest for me in just copying review. Like a lot of the time, obviously I'll look at something and have my own sort of thoughts, and review will be a useful reference point because it will corroborate those thoughts and it kind of makes it feel like, oh, okay. But then other times especially during this season, there's been quite a few moments where I've gone, oh, come on, review, you're drunk. get off the painkillers, this is stupid what you've come up with. And you know, I suppose as well, you've always got that sort of having your own sense of thinking in it, be it messing around with the minutes, or just having that anecdotal understanding of things, which again isn't completely, you know, review friendly, but it's always quite useful to have these things in mind. So let's take, I don't know, Man City's defense as an example, of where you kind of maybe value some qualitative understanding, and they do let in one goal most games, and they have done it this season. And the reason is it's just because they're comfortable and they have that sort of one lack of lapse in concentration, which normally leads to a consolation. And the data will show you, and the model will show you, City have a great defense and their options are great, and that's really useful. But it can't tell you that, for example, their expected goals conceded tends to be low until they reach a point where they're comfortable, and then actually there's that lack of concentration, which seems to consistently happen if you watch Man City, for want of a more flowery analysis. And that might be where you start questioning in having a Man City player. And you know, there's always a sort of idea of variance, and people who have owned Edison, for example, for a while are saying, oh, it's variance the whole time. Yes, variance is fine, but as a phrase, it's starting to become really irritating. It's just a label sort of thrown at things that don't go your way. And it just feels weaker and weaker the more it's said. So, yeah, I mean, that's just an example of maybe how you can use your own thinking. Although, you know, some people don't watch football and don't trust their eyes, and both of them are fine points too. What do you think about that one?
I find it really difficult, and I think this is where FPL review is really good in being objective about some trends. So I think we're very prone as a group of people, as football fans or FPL players, to get sucked into narratives about teams. And I think it becomes very easy for when you get two or three results to say, oh, that team is now bad, or that team is now good, or this is the reason for that team being good or bad. And I do find that review in those examples, you know, as much as we might say about variance and all that kind of stuff, I think review is quite good for giving you that kind of objective measure as to whether something is actually that bad or is actually that good. Of course, the counterpoint is, as what you were saying earlier, is that anecdotal stuff. So when a manager suddenly leaves or a player becomes unavailable that changes their shape or that kind of stuff, that's where I think review struggles to keep up or can't quite reflect that, because it's dealing with much bigger kind of statistical modeling. So, you know, it's dealing with much bigger sample sizes. So that's where I think it probably falls down, and that's probably where you need to kind of input your own intelligence in a way. But I do think that some people do get sucked into saying, oh, that player's bad now because they've blanked the last five games. And I think that review is quite good for just giving that kind of slight nudge on perspective, just to say they're not really that bad. How far you go with that, I think sometimes review is probably too far. So I think you probably just have to balance it back out again, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it's just that sort of injection of objectivity
Yeah, I think
into the
it is good for
bandwagon.
that perspective. And sometimes I find that I get really like spooked by a player and I get very insistent I must own that player. And sometimes review is very good at saying, yeah, but have you considered this angle? Because they're probably not the best way of you getting maximum points out of your transfers.
But it can also sometimes, no, I don't think we've got time to talk about form in inverted commas too much, but it can also mean you miss those players who are converting low XG
Yes.
chances again and again and
The
again.
purple patch players, yeah.
And that can be where you'll kind of find people get left behind if they're just too set on that sort of thing. Although, you know, come the end of the season, you don't have to own these players, and come the end of the season, people do tend to net out around the same, despite not having owned those players. But some years you do see like an individual, like a Mahrez at Leicester, for example. The review wasn't around back then, but converting like mad from low XG chances. Son doing very similar, and review still kind of saying they're not value because we're not doing this, not doing that. So I guess right now, review is kind of maybe less useful, with transfer being more obvious. And it's not really a long-term investment anymore. It's more kind of a quick win, isn't it? So I think it's kind of one where I, again, would look at, for example, this week, I'm looking at Isaac versus Wilson. I'd maybe look at the prediction for that, and just kind of get an idea of what that's going to look like over the next week. But I mean, that's not really what review's for. So maybe it's one to kind of come back to at the start of next season to think about its kind of main sort of overall role, I guess, in management. But yeah, it's definitely been something which has kind of come in a bit more. And it kind of, I guess, maybe is the main thing behind the curse on a lot of the content creators too, because it seems to be that it's consulted by most people now, including most content creators, and maybe kind of, again, a more value-led idea of transfers as being something which has incepted most people. Final thing is this mini league thing. So it's something that I've not really been considering. I used to be, when I first started playing FPL, all about mini league, all my work at mini league was all I cared about. When I came on FPL Twitter for the first time, most people were going, oh, I was in the top 1% last year. I was in the top 10K. Well, I don't know what any of that means. It just mean nothing to me. What I cared about was winning the mini league. And I haven't really looked at them for a long time, mainly because I've been doing crap. But this year, for some reason, I tend to be doing quite well. And especially, there's one thing that kind of got me thinking about this, because I looked at my work mini league, and it's not paid, I've got to say, because paying as part of FPL is obviously something that we'd frown upon. But there is, you know, a bet completely unrelated to FPL, which also affects the outcome of this mini league. And lots of the United's defense, lots of the players who are close to me, I think I've got a 15 point lead, like two or three of them have all got United defenders. One's even got two. And I just wonder whether that kind of means that buying United defender becomes a practical sort of thing, that a defensive cover becomes a practical thing for me to do, even though I don't really, I'm a bit indifferent about that, for example. High Power Cognac, great handle, says, can you share your tactics for mini league chasing and blocking? And I don't know, for me, Lucy, it feels kind of quite dirty, ungentle personally to do it. But you did say to me the other week, oh, you just don't seem to be au fait with these sort of moves and things. I mean, is it something to indulge in? Is it kind of a case of swallowing one's pride and blocking that sort of thing?
Well, before I go on to the blocking question, which I will briefly touch on, I think we've got to that point in the season where you need to establish whether your priority is your like maximum high overall rank or your mini league position. And I say that, and it sounds like contradictory, because you'd think that they go hand in hand. You know, you do well in your league, you do well for rank. But I think sometimes you'll win a mini league just by taking a smaller red arrow than your rivals. Equally, sometimes bad luck can mean a solid strategy and some small greens aren't enough, because other people in your mini league have got bigger greens. So I think you are going to have to look at like what really makes sense to you now. Is it that you've got cash bound up in a mini league and you need to make sure you cash that out, so to speak, or whether you want to kind of go for the best possible rank. If you're going for that mini league win, I don't have any problem with the idea of blocking. I think it's probably just smart play. I know it seems dirty and I know it seems boring, but, you know, if that's your priority, that's the best way to do it if you're in a good position. I think if you're chasing, you need to consider kind of what's the minimum you need to cover. So in terms of, there are going to be some players that it makes sense to own regardless of whether you're covering or whether you're chasing or not. So like Haaland, wouldn't recommend you go without him just because you need to be different. Once you've done that, I think it's about recognising how far you have to go to make up the gap. So if it's only a small gap, it might be that you only need a few players to be slightly different. So if double Newcastle defence is popular in your mini league, then maybe you flip it and you go for double attack. And then if the gap is much bigger, you might have to look at kind of lesser owned premium players like the Kevin De Bruyne's of this world and punt against someone more popular like Salah, for example. I think it's helpful not to only consider who people might own, but who they might bench. So I think a lot of us are dealing with the hangover from the bench boost and have quite strong squads, maybe not 15, but have 13 or 14, and that will have an impact. So I know when you were talking to me earlier about David De Gea, I was looking at the number of Luke Shaws that are a threat in my mini league and thinking, well, actually, I think a lot of those Luke Shaws will be benched, so I may not need to move for him now if I move for him at all. So I think it's about factoring that in as well. And yeah, that's about it, really.
Yeah, that's true. I hadn't considered that maybe we'd see this week, especially with people all wanting to field all of their Newcastle players and all of their Brighton players, they might end up with a sure benching. Like at the moment, I've actually, was coming to comment to it later, I've actually got one of the double game weekers on the bench. It's just one of those weeks where it's so hard to fit people in because our squads are so ridiculous because of low pricing, etc., etc., so on and so on. Been there, done that, talks about it. And it's a case that I do want to kind of win the work mini league. It'd be quite good to finally win it. So I think that I probably do care about doing that. And also, you know, it sort of does make sense because I think Shaw's a skull for me on live FPL. Even though I'm not particularly kind of carried away by the nice defence. I mean, to be honest, it was one clanger this week between United's defence not being a factor and then suddenly, you know, my green arrow becoming potentially a red and me losing the mini-league lead. Like, it's just one of those, isn't it, where you've got to factor that in and factor, so there's a tension, I guess, between practicality and what I may believe.
So, yeah, and I think the thing is there, that's illustrating exactly what I've just said about the kind of deciding your priority between your overall rank and your mini-league, because you're effectively saying there that you're not convinced that United is the best pick, but it serves your purposes really well. So it might be that it doesn't work out being the kind of like best for scoring points, but it means that you've covered off risk. And I think that's what people need to evaluate at this point. It's whether you care more about that overall rank or that mini league.
Hopefully they go hand in hand.
Yeah, I mean, they should. They, in a lot of cases, they will, but I just don't know if they always do.
Yeah, hopefully when it comes to a goalkeeper, it's not going to be the thing that changes my season. But who knows, I could buy De Gea and, you know, Kepa, who I've sold, could, you know, save four penalties in one game or something like that. I'd have won the mini league that way. So no, it is interesting. I spoke to a friend as well on the United point, Goops, who's a United fan. He said, you know, don't back our defence, that we're untrustworthy. Yes, you may have some sort of pride at stake, but there's concerns about De Gea's form, et cetera, et cetera. Whereas Nick was a lot more on the dark side of things and saying, yeah, you know, it makes total sense to get United covered in goal. So, you know, you always have people looking at it through different lenses, and it is quite difficult to find a way through. I just don't know, really. I have to think about it because obviously I'm going to get a Newcastle striker in this week, that's for sure. I've got two transfers, so either I use that on getting a goalkeeper. I've got Kepa at home to Forest, and I've got Raya at home to West Ham. So arguably, I don't even need to make that transfer. So it's one of those where you kind of look at it. The more you look at it, the more kind of cross-eyed you can get about it.
Which goalkeeper are you looking at playing?
Probably Kepa this week against Forest, I think. West Ham and Brentford. I think there's probably I don't really like backing Frank Lampard. I do think that Forest have been just so bad away.
They've just scored three goals.
They have. That's at home. And admittedly, they are playing Southampton. So, you know, it's just a little bit of a different case. Yeah, sorry about that. Chase moves, Lucy. The only thing I was going to ask, and obviously we're not going to go without Haaland or something like that. I mean, with things being so seemingly straightforward in terms of the transfers people are making, so buying another Newcastle/Brighton player this week, 37... buying your Man United or Man City players to round off your kind of four or five you want from them, 38 punt. I mean, what kind of chase moves are there now? I mean, I was thinking the only thing I could think of would be sort of intra-team zagging. So something like buying a Mahrez over a Grealish. Like, you wouldn't be, for example, I looked at the Hub's fixture ticker before this, and you know, they got Palace being fourth in terms of the fixtures to end the season, but you wouldn't go off and buy one of those players right now, would you? So it has to be sort of players who are in the same team, but not the player that your other kind of teammate, that your other sort of opponents have, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think you have got to be a bit weird. You've got to kind of force the issue a little bit, because it is a bit narrow. I said earlier, I think someone like Alvarez, if you're chasing, isn't a terrible idea, because I think he's not going to cost you a huge amount of money and you've probably got a slot that he fits in. I think someone like Mahrez over Grealish makes sense. I think it's difficult looking at the United attack to see anyone other than Bruno and Rashford.
Yeah, which you can't be buying Anthony, can you? Or anything
well, exactly.
Like
it feels like it's a bit much. Martial doesn't play consistently, so you can't go for him. It is a push at this stage to chase, I think. So what I'm effectively saying is, yes, you should have done that a few weeks ago. Sorry about that.
Yeah, you shouldn't have been so rubbish.
I think it's indicative of the way the season's kind of unfolded and why we've both kind of had quite a lot of frustrations at points in the season, because week after week you felt like you're dealing with a very narrow pool of players to pick from, which means that if you have got on a bad trajectory, then it can feel quite difficult to pull yourself out of that spin. And we can't all have, you know, random McAllisters just scoring with their shoulders. So
yeah, but I mean, we spoke about the other week, didn't we, about how it just is just one moment of luck. It's basically all it seems to be at the moment, with the one player that you have different to somebody else. Like McAllister's penalty last week, and today it going in off the back of his head, he doesn't know anything about it. Like, that is just pure luck. And I don't feel good about those, because it's not, but I mean, I do in some ways, because
I think you just have to put yourself in a position to get lucky.
Yeah.
So you pick a few different players, not because you necessarily think that they're significantly different or they have a better ceiling, but just because they are different, so that if you do get that swing of luck, it works out for you. I guess the other thing is that you just go for completely random teams and just hope that the obvious teams stutter and stumble. But that feels so like it could just backfire horribly and you'd end up further down than you were to start with. So
yeah.
I think it is just giving yourself an opportunity to differentiate and get lucky.
Yeah, I mean, you can do all sorts of things. Like the high-stakes gamble this week, for example. Like Haaland, four big chances missed. Or was it four? I think it's four or five.
Yes.
People who didn't captain him and captain Salah were being venerated as some sort of time traveling saint. Well, no, you've just gotten incredibly lucky. There's no, obviously it's a high stakes gamble. You've done well to have gotten into that position, but it's not time traveling. It's just lucky. But there's no other way of putting that. And you know, obviously they were a bit unlucky almost that Salah didn't do more. But I mean, again, that would be another sort of high stakes gamble, depends where you are.
Yeah, and I guess captaincy is another point of variation. If you've got a big gap to cover and you don't really care what else happens, then maybe you go against Haaland and see what happens. But it's not for the faint-hearted, is it?
No, it definitely isn't. Cool, right. A few questions here to round us off, again, on the subject of the transfers. FPL says, Sai asks, are hits ever worth it at this stage of the season? Quite an interesting one, because obviously I think he asked that before, he did ask that before this evening's events. I think a few people maybe are now looking at potentially taking a hit if you've got March in there and you're already kind of using your free transfer and buying a Newcastle striker. I mean, what do you reckon to this?
I think it is diminishing the potential payoff on a hit. But I would point out that we have two consecutive weeks of double game weeks, which is relatively unusual. So I think there is still potential in it. And if you have got a position where you've got March and you're off a few other players, then I don't think it hurts that much to take one over the next few weeks. It really just depends on how you're set up, I think, and the opportunities you can see in that -4. Some people will be better set up than others, and it will just vary. But I think you can still see a payoff. You know, if it was to bring in Bruno Fernandes and someone else high potential, maybe even Kev, then you know, you could see that paying off quite quickly. But yeah, obviously, I wouldn't be suggesting you do them every week for single game week players.
Yeah. Before the events of tonight, my initial thoughts on this were that if there was a player you need to cover, like mission critical, like Haaland, for example, then yes, obviously take that hit. But otherwise, it was just one of those where I was kind of wondering, I don't really see who you need to buy at this minute. And now, if you're a March owner, you probably do need to get rid of him to get someone else in. But, I mean, it's one of those where it's horses for courses. And as Lucy said, sometimes it can be okay to take one hit just to kind of shore things up if you're a few players back from where you want to be. But yeah, time is a wasting, especially when it comes to looking at it and thinking, now is not the time to be thinking, oh, will I get those points back over the next few weeks? No, you need those points to come back straight away, pretty much, to make it worthwhile. And if you're buying a doubler on a hit, especially for a player who's not going to play, then you can tell yourself, oh, that's already a minus, that's only a minus two, or indeed only a zero if the player plays twice. So, hey, just be logical about it, I suppose, is all I'd say.
Yeah, I think so. And I think what you said about getting on the right team, it can be worth that minus four. You know, if you feel like you're a long way back off where you want to be, sometimes it's better just to swallow that hit and get it over and done with than watch your would-be team score loads of points.
Yeah, nothing worse than that, is there? A link to this actually is a good question from Rob Pick. He says, is there a circumstances where you move out your Newcastle assets for a hit to move things around, basically? So he said maybe selling Botman to allow owning Willock, Wilson and Joelinton, who's got the highest XG of any player, I think, over the last six game weeks. Or would you stick with what you've got in terms of kind of Botman or something like that? And that's one which is appealing. It's one nice to drop straight away. But I looked at that. That was the first one I looked at, actually, this week. And I can't do it. I think it has to be like a minus eight or something to move it all around to get Wilson and Isaac in. And it's just, it's not going to happen for me. But I mean, it's quite interesting, isn't it? If you could just reconfigure a little bit and use that hit to do so, to get to that ideal team you've just mentioned.
Yeah, and I think it's exactly the kind of move that is a good chasing move, if you can get there, because I don't think many people will be on double attack. So I think it does have like pretty high upside. I think I would look at it if I was well set for Brighton, United and City, if I had a good spread of those assets and I didn't feel like I had massive gaping holes, which I do, then yeah, I would look at it. But I think, yeah, it's got a pretty high ceiling if Leeds do a Leeds, you know what I mean by that. Then I think it could be really profitable. But I just don't think that my team's in a position where I can afford to... It's not wasting free transfers, but it's basically luxury free transfers that I don't feel like I've got.
Yeah, this is optimising. It puts a lot of pressure on this week to go your way. Obviously, yeah, you want Leeds to be Leeds and then Brighton to continue their uncharacteristic inability to keep clean sheets. And St James's Park, sure. I mean, there's a possibility of that. It's how it affects your kind of team for 37 as well, and how well you're set there. But I mean, yeah, sure. I mean, I could do that. I'd like doing that. I mean, I have Botman on the bench at the moment, the team that I've got, because I literally can't find a way. It's between him and Dunk for who plays basically this week, because I can't see who else in my team I would bench. If I kind of harks back to Lucy's point about the bench boost hangover, like, yes, I've got Greenwood, Henry and Botman as my benches. But that's because my team is so stacked that if
I mean,
you've
I don't
got
even
one
have
of
Greenwood,
those guys,
I've got a Watkins where you've got Greenwood, so it's even more awkward.
Yeah, that's it. Okay, that is awkward. Yeah, but I mean, Watkins is I sold him for Greenwood, so it's one of those where he's just, yeah, Watkins and Villa, I think, are a bit of an afterthought now in FPL terms, aren't they?
Yeah, I mean, Watkins is now pinned to my bench, but it's annoying because you feel like you've got a lot of value just
held up there. That's why I did it. That's why I got rid of him. But I took a mind state to do it and De Bruyne didn't play. Anyway, C-pods ad nauseam. Right, Russell Levy, the lure of a double versus decent single. One of those time-honoured questions. Please talk me out of ditching Kane for a Newcastle forward, he says.
Ooh, yeah. I mean, Kane has kept delivering while we've all gone wild for doubles, like, you know, drunk maniacs. Kane has just reminded us why we bought him in the first place and then sold him anyway. I think if I was Russell, I'd be wondering if there's another way to squeeze in the Newcastle players. Like, surely, does it have to be Kane? But if it has to be Kane, I think you just need to sell yourself on the idea as an opportunity to buy a premium in another slot, because obviously Kane to Newcastle frees up a lot of cash. And I'm hoping you can just find a really nice use of that cash, so that it doesn't feel like you're doing Kane to Newcastle. It feels like you're doing Kane for that other premium.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the only other thing I would say as well is that it's actually a relatively safe sell now for Kane. His EO is like 20% in the top 100.
Yeah, that is true. Yeah, he doesn't kill you like he used to.
Yeah, because everyone sold him to get Salah. That's just the long and short of it, Russell. So I'd be able to kind of clothe myself in the comfort blanket of both. Yeah, it gives me an opportunity to rejig to a midfielder premium, and it also means it's also not as big a risk as it was a little while ago. But he just can't stop scoring at the moment. But the opportunity cost of not having him and having one of his other premiums instead, probably one worth bearing in mind. And that was actually a question from our friend, a friend of the pod and a mutual friend, Duncan FPL Swat, who said, which premiums alongside Haaland should we be prioritising? He says, there's Bruno, who's only got 2 out of 10 returns, but he's got double game week in 37, a KDB, good form or rotation risk, and or Salah out there with no double. I guess for me, speaking for myself, I mean, it's all about grabbing those points now. So I've got Salah and KDB at the moment, and I fully plan to swap Salah to Bruno for the extra game in 37, and then probably bring back Salah for 38 because he's got Southampton away. Sorry. But yeah, I think that it's kind of a bit of an inelegant sort of way to end the season, but I think kind of sums up the season entirely to do something like that, just to kind of optimise where you are, really. But yeah, I think it's all about the doubles and all about the extra game and just hoping those two bites at the cherry do something for you. Yeah, that's the only way I'd look at it. I guess KDB is a bit more of an awkward one if you don't actually own him. And most people probably think it'd be unpalatable if you're holding a Grealish, for example, to move Grealish to KDB on 1 week. So it's one of those that you only come in on if you've got someone who you want to move out. Selling Salah for Aston Villa at home with Liverpool doing so well in 37 as well may be unpalatable to some. And you said you wanted to keep Salah and somehow kind of manoeuvre a way to get Bruno back. Is that kind of how you're still looking at it?
Yeah, well, I mean, this is painful to say as someone who sold him a few weeks ago, but I think of those three that Dunk went through, I think Bruno is the priority. His appeal, so we're looking at kind of his past performance and wondering if he's worth it with those 2 out of 10. I mean, his appeal was significantly dented by that Casemiro suspension where he dropped deep and didn't really do a lot. But now he's back in the attacking area. He's putting up pretty good numbers. He's obviously still got penalties and that double game week. And the fixtures around it are really good. So Wolves this week, Bournemouth and Chelsea in the double, and Fulham afterwards. So I think that's a pretty good run of fixtures. So he would be the priority for me. And I think most people probably already have him, so it's a bit awkward for me. As for Salah and KDB, I think you're likely, for the majority of structures that aren't like Tom's, you're looking at one or the other. And I think we'll need more info on KDB before the 37 deadline for me to make a judgment on that one, because I think it's going to go right down to the wire in terms of whether he's played a lot in the Champions League, how his minutes have looked this coming weekend, and all of that kind of stuff for me to make a judgment on it. At the moment, I think he's too much of a risk to pass up on Salah, who's looking quite good at the moment, and Liverpool look a bit better. So, and is Leicester coming up as well? I'm keen on that. And Southampton in 38, and most of us won't be able to flip back once we've gone one way or another. So I am edging towards ignoring KDB. I'd like him, but I just think it's quite awkward to get to. And we know that he's unlikely to be a big EO threat. So that's where I am on those.
Cool. All right. Now let's move on to transfers and captains to end the pod. So I've got to ask you first, March replacement thoughts. It's going to be the main topic for most people this week. But hey, we always do things differently and leave this to the very end rather than fronting up and going through all of the boring things you could possibly do before kind of saying, you know what, I'm probably going to buy McAllister. Yeah.
Yeah, I think I am going for McAllister. I think the only good bit of luck out of my entire situation this week is that I held off on buying Edison for Raya. I nearly did with 2 minutes to go. I was like, oh, well, finally, Edison's variance will change. And I didn't do it. So that does mean that I can afford the March to McAllister upgrade, because obviously there's a little shortfall there in terms of money required. For those that have March and no money in the bank, I actually don't know what to suggest. You're probably looking at some kind of restructure or just benching him, I think.
You could probably take a punt on Buonanotte, maybe 4.5. I mean, yeah. You know.
Well, I suppose you could, yeah, because he would be the obvious replacement, I suppose. Yeah. But then Cissé, so I don't really know how that works either.
A gross as well at 5.4. Obviously, that's a lot more money to kind of fork out. Well, I don't know. It depends where you are.
It has to be Buonanotte, doesn't it? If you haven't got the money in the bank, because
yeah, you've got 0.1 to get to 0.1 to get to gross. I mean, that's probably okay. The only problem would be is you have a poo player a lot of the time if he's fielded at right back.
Right back, yeah.
Veltman's not back for a little while, is he? So one of those where you're thinking about it a little bit. But I expect most people are going to go through the motions of evaluating every single player out there in the universe before kind of ending up on McAllister, which is the obvious thing to do. So let's, yeah.
Not if you didn't have the money, would you take, would you free up the money for McAllister?
Probably is the answer. I wouldn't actually mind, for example, having a punt on someone like Enciso or someone like who might come in March's stead, or you know,
the problem with Enciso is the forward, isn't he?
Yeah, oh, that's true. Actually, yeah, no, it's very difficult to read the tea leaves really on who ends up,
yeah,
in that March slot, like long term, especially because obviously this evening, the idea was that Buonanotto played that role. Buonanotto went off at half time.
He was poor in that first half
And does so. So what happens now? I mean, does Caicedo somehow end up being right wing forward rather than being right back? We simply don't know with De Zerbi as well, which is what's so bloody difficult about this one. But I mean, with two games, you would kind of be assuming that a player like Buonanotte would probably play one of them and be benched for the other. Like, that's kind of what you'd be hoping for a 4.5 million midfielder. That's kind of, it's all priced in, isn't it? So yeah, maybe I'd go there if I couldn't afford to jump up to Mac. Not great, is it? But it's just one of those where, you know, you've had a good run with March. He's done really well.
He's done better if he got that goal that he wasn't given, but whatever.
Yeah, I'm still 147 points. Like, he's in the top 10 for midfielders, despite not being a very good player. So yeah, there you go. Deserve.
I don't think anyone's going to pretend he's a very good player, are they?
Well, I don't know. I've made that point a few times, and I've been told that's a bad take. It's a terrible take. He's improved a lot. Yeah, I mean, yeah. So I think he's not a bad player. He's an average player. Is kind of where I'd go with it. And yeah, Deserbi clearly listened to me because he's dropped him twice in a row. So there we go.
Although apparently that was fitness rated, and if the hamstring's anything to go by, you can see why.
Poor guy. Right. For me this week, one thing, as I mentioned earlier on, is that I'm probably going to be benching a double game weaker just because I've got So I've got my midfielders, obviously Matoma and McAllister, Rashford, Salah, De Bruyne. And then up front, I've got Haaland and I'll have up Isak. So bench one of those. I don't think I can, especially because...
Yeah, that is the problem with De Bruyne. You definitely can't bench him, can you? So
the City play on Sunday and then the next game in the Champions League is on Wednesday. And people will say, oh, he may be rested. Well, no, he won't be because Pep players...
I like that he said, no, he won't be. And then he thought, hang on, it's Pep. No way.
Yeah, yeah. But I think Pep likes players to have that sort of sense of rhythm, right? And there's quite a long sort of layover between Tuesday and Sunday and then Sunday and Wednesday. That's fine for a professional athlete. So I think that...
He'll just manage his minutes, I think.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, I don't like kind of, I hate that sort of the Pep whispering sort of thing that goes on, and people sort of, you go out of the realm of facts necessarily and into the realms of I reckon. So I reckon it should be all right. So I think it's going to probably be one of Botman and Dunk. I think FPL Taxi also said he's looking at benching Estupiñan over Trent. And it's a horrible one, really, for both of those teams, because, you know, Brighton is a disgusting defensive proposition for them. Arsenal and Newcastle away. I see that's 4 points, isn't it, for your best, potentially, unless you can scrape a lucky attack in return for your Brighton defender. And then for Newcastle, it was Leeds and Brighton. Normally that would be all right, but Newcastle haven't kept clean sheets since game week 29 against United. And that was their first clean sheet since game week 21, i.e. late January. So another way of putting that is they've got one clean sheet in 15 game weeks. It's just absolutely crazy.
Really, because they don't look like a bad defence, but they're
never clean sheets. No, it's Man City syndrome, isn't it? Basically, neither looks great to me. And the only thing that may act as a bit of a kicker here in giving me a decision is that I'm assuming that Brighton's defence is going to be quite highly owned. So maybe I'll play Dunk over Botman. There's nothing really to choose him between Botman and Dunk, except maybe Dunk's got a slight bit more kind of a potential to get attacking returns, maybe. Like those long raking balls plus also corners. I don't know. Not the best, but hey, I mean, it'd be a bit of a kind of an unlock, I guess. It's just because Botman's been there since the wildcard, I think. So I happen to have him rather than having kind of actively bought in, if that makes sense. So I'm okay with that being as it is.
Yes, I know what you mean. You haven't used a free transfer on him because you've had him since the wild card. Is that what you're trying to say?
Well, I don't know if it was the wild card, but I've since the second wild card. Sorry. So yeah, he's just sort of been there. So if I bench him, then no kind of harm done, I don't think. And I just
assume... Yeah, no, I like that. I like that logic. I think it's very uncommon to have this situation where you are even tempted to bench doublers, but I think it's going to be a very common problem this week because we've got those like maxed out squads from, you know, low price players and bench boost hangovers. I don't hate it because I don't think any of the doubles this week are much. Like, either the doubles are much fun.
No, they're not great, are they?
It's just because they're both strong teams, aren't they? So that they make strong opponents for each other.
Yeah, I'd be much happier with obviously having the double attack for Newcastle.
Yeah, but... I would too, but it's just awkward, isn't it?
Yeah, again, I can't really be selling any of those midfielders. Like,
when we did the planning for it, we never expected Wilson to be on the menu. Is the problem?
No, and I don't know. I just don't know. And I think FPL Review is telling me to bench Trent, for example, and play Botman and Dunk. But that's probably another case of, you know, get off the diazepam review. That's just silly.
Well, they're just we know that models love a double game week, so they're never going to tell you to bench a doubler, and that's one of those things where you're going to have to. I think if you do bench a doubler, you're going to have to make peace with the fact that you're probably limiting your ceiling a bit. I mean, there is a lucky situation that comes out of them somehow miraculously keeping two clean sheets.
Yeah, true, but there's also a situation of Trent doing loads of things against Leicester, who's just lost 5-3 against Fulham.
Yeah, I mean, I probably wouldn't be benching Trent, the people that are thinking about that.
Yeah, and that's the only option I've pretty much got, because we mentioned Trippier, probably not. And, you know, yeah, that's it. That's your option. So, hey.
Yeah, I'm at the moment, I'm benching Grealish. I don't even know if that's a good decision or not.
I think that's probably okay. Just, again, you know, it is what it is. Or you can just kind of think, you know what, I bench Estupiñán or bench Botman or whatever your Newcastle defender is and just be done with it. It's an awkward decision. You may well leave points on the bench this week, but defensively...
I think there is going to be points on the bench this week. People are just going to have to accept that.
Yeah, defensively, neither of these are good double game weeks. And then for me, transfers-wise, it's going to be who I bring in, probably. I mean, there's obviously a shout to Captain Trippier and have have a chance to gain from a highly owned player. But I kind of feel like with the defence, their defence being so shambolic in terms of the overall results rather than the underlying data, which is still very good, it's probably going to have to be one of Wilson or Isaac who comes in. And I'm leaning Isaac in at the moment. I know the market's going towards Wilson. I think that's just because of the X-Mins, because he's versatile. Yeah. So he can play on the left. He can also play up top on his own. And I think that kind of favours him slightly.
You saw it in the Arsenal game, didn't you? That when... it comes to the end of the game, it's Isak going into the middle and Wilson coming off.
Yeah.
That's the theme. Wilson can't play out wide, so he's up top or he's not in. So
yeah.
And I do wonder, with Wilson's injury history, can he even...
Oh, yeah. That's the other thing, the previous. So I've owned Wilson, apart from the Bournemouth days when he and Wilt Fraser were like assisting each other and scoring all the time. Every other time I've owned Wilson, he's just fallen over and smashed to a million pieces within 20 minutes.
Yep, same experience.
So it's quite difficult to trust Wilson, whereas Isak, I've actually owned him one time this season. I think that was the week before he got injured himself, which probably...
Oh, yeah, we both had him then, yes.
Yeah, who scored the penalty and then got injured straight away. Yeah, so maybe I just go with him again, but that just feels like, yeah, so that'll probably be one transfer. And then the other one is if I do a goalkeeper to De Gea, or whether I just leave it, because you've got Raya away at home to West Ham, and you've got Kepa at home to Nottingham Forest. So feasibly, you could think that one of them could...
Yeah, you could have ended up with egg on your face, couldn't you?
Yeah, they could compete against De Gea if he's got Wolves at home. Yeah, I mean, it's one that I'm going to have to think about, or I could just kind of think, you know what, I'm get that move out of the way, who knows. Right, what about you? I guess captaining Isak and March to McAllister and you're all done?
That's... probably it. I don't know if I'm totally sold on Isak captain, but probably am. But yeah, March to McAllister seems the obvious move, so I'll probably do that.
Yeah. I don't mind the Trippier captain shout. All it would take is one of those games to be a clean sheet for it to be all right. It's just kind of, you know, at this point in the season, it's quite difficult to make the case against shooting for the upside, quite literally, by going for the strikers. Yeah, go for it. Cool. Well, if that's your lot. Good to do a full fat pod again. Apologies for the editing on this not being as stringent as it normally would be, but I have a crying child that I can already hear in my ear, and that will need my attention more than this podcast will. Yes, we'll be back next week.
Thanks for listening. We were Who Got the Assist. You can find Tom on Twitter at WGTA_FPL, and you can find me at Lucy Heinick with two T's. If you enjoyed listening to this, please like and subscribe to the podcast. For new listeners out there, if you think you'll be coming back, please hit that 5-star rating across platforms like iTunes and Spotify so more people can enjoy the pod.
Well, yeah, that's it. I think we'll do normal pods from now until the end of the season, despite there being doubles, because, well, it's almost the end, so as we'll get the max time out of it. We're down to the anti-penultimate one, I think, next week. Yeah, free to go. Cool. Hope your sister, do you think about transfers? I'll speak to you very soon. Have a good week.
Oh, it's a goal. Who got the assist? Who got the assist?
Sports Social Podcast Network.